Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, a podcast for the modern age. Come for the whiskey, stay for the shit show. Introducing Justin Currie at Wizard of Whiskey, Julia Men at the Wee Tipple. And now, pour yourself a drink and enjoy the show. I know I will.
Anyway, welcome back, Ramblers. Here we are. Guys, it's season five. It's 2025.
Hey-o!
They tried to shut us down again. It's coming. Don't worry. The Gestapo's coming. But anyway, so here we are, Swig and Ramble, season five. Wow. Welcome to 2025 for those who have survived the past few months.
But we're here.
Yeah, we are excited to be here. We are here today, as always, the incredibly handsome, devilishly charming myself, Justin here. And then there's Julia. I think she's here. Say hi.
Hey.
And then, of course, we have our special guest, Chris Cardone, mixology expert, hospitality industry expert, all around great guy. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's that pretty much sums it up. Thanks for coming, guys.
Yeah.
Have sure a great night. Done. Thank you.
Cool. So let's start. Chris, what is in your glass, my friend? Let's jump in here.
Yeah. So I am sipping on the Pathfinder Bitters. It's a, I think, the probably best tasting all around NA Amaro substitute, if you will, right? So I haven't been drinking for 9.5 years now, but when I did, one of my favorite things to sip on was Amaro, and I would just usually drink it neat. And so the Pathfinder is for me that sort of go-to sort of bitter herbaceous sipper. And so that's what I'm sipping on.
What the hell does NA mean? Oh, he means non-alcoholic. Well, that's right. That's right, Ramblers. It's an NA episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's Forgot like to mention that. Plan this.
All right. Let's keep it going here. What sour is your mash, my friend?
Well, I would say that at 44 going on 45, trying to understand social media and understand how people use it for a business purpose is something that I just don't understand. And so this is not anything new, right? We had this on, I'm sure, now I'm granted I was born in 1980, but I'm sure that there were influencers in the radio world, and then there were influencers on the television world, and now there are influencers in the social media world. This formula has not changed. But what I find really interesting is that I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think that the influencing world of social media is a little different in that society today does not value mastery the same way that it used to. And so I think that there's almost an accepted allowance that people who may not know what they're talking about can influence people into making decisions that they don't really have the knowledge to be doing, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yes, it does. Jesus. Oh, that's terrifying what you just said.
I'm not ignorant to the fact that I'm sure movie stars, you know, would always plug things. And it was like, well, you're a movie star. Why are you doing this? But it feels like we're bombarded with these messages now. And it doesn't feel, I didn't feel that when I was 20 that I do now. And again, maybe that's just old grumpy Chris. I don't know. But it just seems that, again, we're bombarded by this sort of, hey, I like for our industry, right? Hey, I've been bartending for 6 months. Let me tell you why I know everything about bartending. You know, and because I have 85,000 followers and I know I can read ChatGPT can tell me what the flavor profile of this spirit is. So let me tell you all about it. And it just seems silly to me.
This episode, by the way, sponsored by Instagram and
Hey.
ChatGPT. So, to piggyback on that, our crew worked on a paper some years ago that we're still editing. It started off as two separate papers, one on sex in marketing, because Instagram and several other social media applications have a very specific algorithm. And there's a lot of imagery. And then the second part was the beginnings and history of influencing. It actually goes back to like when they were building the pyramids. This is not new. You mentioned radio. One of the funniest things is there's a documentary out there about the beginnings of radio. It started off as long form commercials that were hidden as shows. They basically hid them within a show, and it was a long form commercial for products, usually health products or snake oils or other bullshit that people were hawking. So we have radio and television and now social media, thanks, because of that, because somebody happened to discover the electron, and now we are totally fucked. Great Sour Jumash. Julia, what you got?
Oh, well, in the spirit of this episode, I am drinking one of my favorite NA beverages, a lime seltzer water.
But about spirit,
Because
get it? Spirits.
I'm, yeah. Okay, thanks, Justin. Yeah, this one happens to be polar. I often get the lime LaCroix or the lime ones from Trader Joe's, and I actually do drink way less than I used to in my 20s. Holy shit. Because let me tell you, age and hangovers are real, and that sucks. But yeah, lime seltzers have always been where it's at for me. They're clean and easy and usually not too bubbly, so you know I'm getting all gassy burpy. And what sour is my mash? Fucking why does everything have a con to it? Like, there's a pro, but then there's a con. Like, I like to bake my own bread now, and the con is that if you just make a bunch of bread and then you eat the bread, then you gain the weight, and then you have to exercise, and it's a vicious cycle. Why can't I just make and eat and enjoy fucking bread? Is that really so goddamn hard? And yeah, I probably could have done that 10 years ago when I was in my 20s, but I wasn't eating gluten then, and I'm like, God damn it, this is just some bull shit. So that sours my mash. How about you, Justin?
Flame Newton, I guess. All right. So what's in my glass? I made what is called a mocktail, if that tells you anything about what this episode is going to be about. I took a little pineapple juice. I took some amaretti blue acai syrup, their craft puree, and then I splashed a little bit of ginger ale in there with some ice. And I have to say, this is pretty fucking refreshing.
That sounds delicious.
I literally, people who aren't in my family won't understand this, or unless you're a hoarder, you won't understand this. I found a case of pineapple juice in my garage.
Justin.
I bought it, but then it wound up under some tools. So, like, tucked away under one of my saws was a case of pineapple juice that I just discovered like a couple of weeks ago. And so I started opening and using pineapple juice for everything because it's, I think I still have like a year before it all expires, but so now there's just little cans of pineapple juice everywhere.
Oh my. How old are those? What was the date on them?
Sometime in 2025, so I'm fine. I should be okay. But so yeah, what sours my mash? I think we're all kind of going for the old, sours these days. Technology. Why the fuck do you have to change your user interface? That's a fancy word that I happen to know. Every 3 minutes. It took me 3 minutes to understand how to record this episode because Zoom changed its fucking interface. And I'm like, where's the Chris is over here looking at me like, what is this guy doing? Is this guy for real? How many fucking episodes has he recorded? Just like in his face, like, stop changing shit.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you changing
How about the
shit?
photos section on an iPhone?
Oh, God.
They just made a new update. I can't figure it. I can't
Oh,
figure
my
out
God. Really?
where to find
No.
anything anymore. And yeah,
No.
Android all the way. I can't do iPhones.
There you go.
But I because they're too no. No, I seriously stop changing things.
Yeah, got
Technology overlords, I know you're listening. Just stop changing shit.
I
Leave the
God, I
damn button
remember
alone.
when they would change even sites like Zanga way back in the day, like super throwback. And even Facebook, when I was new to Facebook, and they would change it, and you could opt to accept the changes. But eventually they would force it upon you anyway, and I'm like, God damn it, I'm just so tired of keeping up with changes. Oh God, that makes me sound so.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we all
see,
sound.
this is my point. We're all going for the older. I feel like I should be playing Sam Cooke right now. Change is gonna come. Like, just it's all right. So obviously we're talking non-alcoholic beverages. I am utterly ignorant on this topic. It's funny because I'm not much of a drinker. I review, as everyone knows, I review things, but I don't like very rarely do I sit down at a restaurant and have a cocktail or a glass of wine, unless it's a special occasion. So let's jump right in. Chris, tell us who you are, name, rank, serial number, all that fun stuff, and why are we talking to you?
Yeah, so my name is Chris. I'm an Aries. I've been tending bar since 2000,
He
and
likes
I
long walks on the
started.
beach too.
I do like long walks on the beach. I started bartending in 2000. I was in college and I saw the movie Cocktail, and I wanted to be Tom Cruise. And I went as soon as I got. It was between my junior and my senior year of college. As soon as I got home, I went to bartending school, and I wasted $250 on that. And then I went to yeah, and then I went to a bar called the Roadhouse. True story, not the movie, a real Roadhouse. Although it was there were some similarities there. There were a lot of fights and stuff like that there, and that sort of took me on a journey. And then at that time, cocktails weren't a thing. There was no such thing as mixology. There was no such thing as cocktails. Maybe, Dale DeGroff had a moment where he was thinking about talking about this stuff, but in 2000, it was all flair bartending. Everything was flair bartending. And so that was the beginning of my journey. And I used it to travel across the country, sometimes outside the country, and meet bartenders from all over who were doing the flair thing. And then in 2003, there was a cocktail competition, excuse me, a bartending competition that we were holding in New York called the Big Apple Showdown. And it was flair and cocktails. And the cocktails were horrific, just so we understand where we were at that time. And that night, a couple of us went to Milk and Honey. And I had never heard of it before. And I live in New York. So I was like, what is this place? What are we talking about? And it had no sign. You had to text when you got outside and let them know you're outside. They open the door. There's nothing but a black curtain. You go in through the curtain, and all of a sudden you're greeted with wood and brick everywhere and candlelight and jazz music. And I was like, where are we right now? And it blew my mind because it was nothing I had ever seen before. It was truly what a speakeasy is supposed to feel like, where you're walking into the 1920s. I mean, Sasha nailed it. And he was behind the bar that night. And I remember there was no menu. It was so not pretentious. He was just, hey, what do you like to drink? What's your favorite spirit? What do you want? What can I craft you? And he did. And it was just bang, bang, bang. The three of us got our drinks and they were delicious and we were blown away. And I read the writing on the wall. I said, oh my God, this is gonna be something. And about a year later, a couple more spots opened up in the city. And I went out and got my Joy of Mixology and Craft of the Cocktail books and clung on to those while I was working at a steakhouse and learning, oh, I want to make a sidecar tonight. Oh, this is really exciting. And then flair just kind of vanished and the cocktail thing exploded. Jumped to 2014, Diageo World Class starts to become a thing. I competed in 14, got into the national finals, competed in 15, shit the bed and got out, didn't even make through the regionals. 16, got back to taking second place in the nationals, and 17, I won. And then from that point on, I judged Diageo World Class from 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. And then I guess my last part of the puzzle is recently I helped collaborate and create a line of ready-to-drink cocktails. And so that's been a really, really cool, different part of my universe of the bartending world is making drinks a la carte behind a bar and making things in a lab are very different worlds. And so it's been a complete different education for me. And then I guess the subtext to my whole story is that in 2015, I decided to quit drinking. And there's a whole story there, but I never looked back, and I'm coming in on 10 years and still in this industry.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's start with ChatGPT's questions. What inspired you to start creating mocktails?
Well, when I got sober, I kept it private because I didn't know the space and I didn't know where I should be. And I was having a lot of insecurity about whether or not I should quit the industry. You know, I just like other people that would ask me, you know, how are you gonna be a bartender and sober? How's that gonna work for you? I felt the same kind of questions inside, and I didn't know if I could do this. And then when I won World Class, I felt like I had a bit of a platform. And so I started talking about the fact that I was seeing a lot of people that I care deeply about that were in my universe overdoing it very often, like I had been. And I kind of wanted to get the message out there that said, you know, you can do this industry and you can be successful and you can win bartending competitions and you can do this long term, even while you're not drinking. It's still possible. And I got a lot of pushback from it. A lot of people telling me to, you know, zip it up and get off my soapbox and get off my high horse. And just a lot of vitriol. And I zipped it up. I did what they asked. I said, all right, well, maybe I'm doing more harm than good here. So zip. And maybe about a year ago, I started looking around and I started realizing that the world we're living in now is very different than the world we were in 2017. And the word sober curious didn't exist back then. There were no good non-alcoholic ingredients. When I mean like spirits, non-alcoholic spirits. At the time, you know, Seedlip was the first one that kind of got on the map. And that wasn't until, I don't even know, maybe 1920, where the US market started seeing it. And all of a sudden, there's been an explosion of these products that are actually good. And so it got me thinking, you know, maybe I hate to use this term, but like take a second try at this and sort of give that message again that you can do this as a career and you don't have to drink if you don't want to. And again, maybe for selfish reasons, like I like to go out and have a nice dinner and I like to go to a bar and hang out with my friends. But if I'm relegated to sitting there with my hands in my pockets or to drink a pint glass of tonic water while every single person around me is asking me why I'm not drinking, honestly, it's not the most enjoyable experience. So usually I'm at about 30 minutes before I want to leave the bar. That's usually my time. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore. And with dinner, it's the same thing, right? I want to sit down. I want to have my appetizer, my entree, maybe my dessert, and then I want to go. For me, there's no staying power there. And I think part of that is that the experience of having something in your hand is taken away when you don't drink alcohol. And so to create non-alcoholic beverages that have the same intention, that have the same level of balance, and that are good experiences on understanding flavors and how they can work together, other than just putting a mishmash of tropical fruit juice in a glass and going, here's your cocktail. I think there's a value there and there's an education to be had. And I think, and I know I'm running on here, but I think that there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of ignorance. And I don't mean that in ignorance has such a negative term to it, but an ignorance of what a non-alcoholic spirit actually is. And how it can be used to create an experience for someone like myself who wants to go out and I want to order something too off the menu and I don't want to feel excluded and I don't want to feel special like there's something wrong with me or that I'm different than everybody else. I just want to order off the menu, get it in my glass and sip on it and enjoy it.
I feel you on that, because I am a vegan. I do not eat animals, and I feel that so much when going out to restaurants. Like, I have to always look at the menu ahead of time. Is there anything I can eat besides maybe like fries or a salad? And absolutely, people that do not drink alcohol, they're like, okay, well, I'll have water, that's for sure. Maybe I'll have a soda. Usually there's not going to be, and I don't even want to say specialty item because it shouldn't be a specialty item. It should just be a
The
natural
norm.
thing. Yeah, I remember a couple years ago when I was visiting a friend in Belgium, we went to this bar that was like kind of a craft cocktail place. So it specialized in cocktails. But I was blown away. And this was late, like what, 20, 2018, maybe? And they had an entire, like almost as large of a selection of NA, like proper cocktails, as their regular cocktail section. And I remember I had gotten, like, we got one regular alcoholic cocktail, and then we switched to the NAs because they sounded so awesome. And one of them, like, they even used like a little smoker to create it. They were the most absolutely beautiful, delicious, quote unquote, mocktails I'd ever had. And I'm like, holy shit, more people got to be doing this. Because there is absolutely, I would think, such a demand for that. Like, I've seen it, I'm sure you have. Feel free to talk about the changes in demand for NA options you've seen in the recent years.
Yeah, when I mean, I'm still work at a restaurant on the weekends, and when I do, I can't believe how many people are not drinking. But I also can't believe how many people apologize for it, or have to be, I don't want to say like hidden, that's not the right word, but they sort of treat it like they haven't decided yet. So I'll go over and I'll say, can I offer you something to drink? And they'll be like, oh, we're not sure yet, we don't know. And then I'll revisit the question and I'll say, yeah, we're still not sure, we don't know. And then I'll revisit the question and say, I'm not having anything. And I was like, well, why didn't you just say that? And I don't say that to them, obviously, but that's in my brain because there's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's nothing to feel shame about that you don't want to have an alcoholic cocktail. And so again, it's what you experienced was way ahead of the time back in 2018. But again, the whole idea and part of the reason that I launched my business is that there's a big opportunity for education, not just in the States, but specifically what I see in the States is there's so much education to the value of having non-alcoholic cocktails on your menu. Because if the numbers, which who knows what the numbers are, but if the numbers are right and 30% of the public are not drinking alcohol anymore, well, guess what? That means 3 out of 10 people that walk into your bar or restaurant are going to have a water. And that means you're losing a lot of money. And
Oh,
so
yeah.
brands that make alcohol need to be aware of this. Bartenders need to be aware of this because bartenders and restaurant servers are making their tips based on the check average. So they need to be aware of this. And the owner who has to pay the bills has to be aware of this. So there's a lot of education to be done in the value of having a cocktail menu that also has non-alcoholic options that, again, are just as well
Yeah.
executed as a cocktail menu. It can't be, hey, I'm doing this homemade syrup and this acid and this infusion and this smoker, and I'm doing all these crazy things on my cocktail menu. Or you can have some pineapple juice in a glass with a squeeze of lime. Like it can't be like that. It doesn't No, but you have a cocktail that is thought out, right? You have all of the flavors and all of you have an acid in there, you have a syrup in there, you have bubbles in there, you have a cocktail. And so it's thought out more than, again, what I'm so used to, which is, homemade tonic water. Great. That's what I can order, your homemade tonic water. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I would say in the retail realm, it's utterly apparent that numbers have been drastically down in terms of alcohol purchasing. And I've started to see the big shift into the THC CBD seltzers. So that's obviously, it's not just affecting retail, it is absolutely affecting on-premise accounts as well. And I'm not seeing the shift that retailers have made to actually fill that new gap and give the consumers what they're actually wanting. So it's kind of mind-boggling. Like I see it here and there, but not to the extent that we are talking about that it really ought to be. What do you think it would take for mocktails to be seen as equal to traditional cocktails, and to have bars and restaurants start actually creating and making those a proper offering.
Education. That's it. It's simply education. It's the same thing. And we were just talking about it. It's the same thing when I went into Sasha's bar in 2003. There were four cocktail bars in New York City. Four. And everyone, nobody knew what a jigger was. Nobody was using, fresh juice. Nobody was making homemade syrups. Nobody was making bitters. That wasn't a thing. And then slowly, education brought everyone's awareness up to where now there's a cocktail menu on every bar and restaurant's menu. They may not be good,
Oh
but
yeah.
they're on the menu. And
Oh
so
God.
you can't go into a restaurant without seeing a cocktail menu. And that was not the case 20 years ago. So I hope that it doesn't take that much long time-wise, but it's the same thing. It's really interesting when you talk about the retail thing. You go into any liquor store now, anywhere, what are you bombarded with? RTDs
Oh yeah.
everywhere, right? And there's like 50 different ones on the shelf of all these different brands who have RTDs. And every spirit company is jumping into this and making an RTD also. And so where that explosion came from, the push, right? The push of drinking at home from COVID. That's where the RTD thing exploded. And now 5 years COVID re removed, like launch of COVID, whatever it's called, that market is just saturated. And the NA market is saturating now too, where every single day somebody's launching another NA spirit, another NA beer, another NA wine. And again, it's the same thing with, you can do this with beer, you can do this with wine, you can do this with cocktails, do with NA spirits. A lot of it's not very good, but there are so many options. But yet, liquor stores, now I live in New York, so you can't have, it's weird, there's a law, you can't have your NA products in a liquor store, which is really weird. But
Yeah, that sucks. Liquor
yeah,
stores.
really, really weird. You
My
can't mix the
God.
two. And so your NA products have to be either sold direct to consumer, or you can buy them in non-alcoholic stores. Like there's one Spirited Away in New York City, where you can just walk in and it's, wall to wall NA spirits. But you go anywhere else in this country, I mean, you have NA spirits and you have alcoholic spirits in a Whole Foods. They're just sitting next to each other. And so I had a really interesting conversation with the CEO of Liars, Anthony Pullen, who's a long time friend of mine from the Flair world. And we were talking about how it's such an interesting conversation because certain brands don't use the word, like, for example, gin alternative. They'll just say, like, Seedlip doesn't call itself a gin or it's a tequila or anything like that. It's Seedlip and then it's their name. And so certain ones say they're a, like, Ritual will say tequila alternative, and then other ones will say agave spirit. And so there's all this different messaging and marketing that everyone's trying to figure out. Because if you do go into a Whole Foods, right? If I own a Whole Foods in, let's say, Pennsylvania, where do I put this stuff, right? I know where all my vodka goes and my gin goes and my tequila goes and my rum goes, but where do I put the gin alternative? Do I put it with the sodas, or do I put it with the gins, or do I put it somewhere all together separate? What do I do with it? And so there's a lot of confusion. So I think the answer to your question is education. I think that people need to understand that, like, this product, the Pathfinder, is not flavored water, which is what I am bombarded with messaging-wise that I see on social media all the time. We were talking about the influencer thing. My influencer ability is garbage, and my reach on let's say LinkedIn is like, if I get 200 impressions, it's a good day. And I had a post where I simply showed the cost difference between a Tanqueray Gimlet and a Seedlip Gimlet. That's all. I just did a T and I just showed the prices and I showed that a Seedlip Gimlet costs 30 cents more to make. And I got 22,000 impressions on it. And everyone that was coming at me was basically saying, how can you charge the same? And, it's flavored water and they shouldn't call it spirits because there's no alcohol in it. It should be called a ghost, LOL. And all these different kind of condescending comments from people. And I find the conversation so interesting because I'm not trying to vilify alcohol, right? It's my business. I have no problem with people who drink. I want people to drink. I want people to be happy and do whatever they want. But there's a strange value that we as a society have put alcohol, which is, if you want to get brass tacks, it is poison. So if you want to take a poison and put it in your body, that should cost more money than an alternative that doesn't have poison in it.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling, because
It's
you
like
can't do that with food, right? If I said, hey, this organic steak costs more money than the non-organic steak, no one pushes back on that. No one says, oh, that's stupid. The non-organic steak is real steak or some nonsense conversation like that. That doesn't happen. But
it does, and I
yeah.
am one of those, because organic
It's
means
okay.
nothing in this country. But
It's absurd that
yeah.
proper, just real food, not the processed chemical created bullshit, is so unaffordable. Or it's, yeah, it, anyway, that's
It
another
costs
conversation. But
more to eat a
comparable.
salad than a burger at McDonald's.
Absolutely. That's exactly it.
Not
And
yet. Sorry.
it
It does. No, you're right. And
Yeah.
it's so funny. So we've been boycotting McDonald's for a little over a year, and our wallets have, I don't know where the fuck all this money came from. Like, suddenly I'm Scrooge McDucking it over here.
Had McDonald's since 7th grade.
That I don't even have words for you. It's so funny how you see things like the museum where that has like the Big Mac in it, where it hasn't, like, it's still there like 20 something years later, and it's just like, it's not food. I think what we should do is, I think we should invite a couple of non-alc brands on, and let's have Chris back, and let's do a taste test of some non-alc brands. Let's talk about what non-alcoholic spirits actually are, because there is a lot of confusion. Are they de-alcoholized? Don't answer. Are they de-alcoholized products? Are they products that are made like tea? What are they? How are they made? Let's do that on another episode for sure.
Well, yeah, talking in this realm, so we're not going to dive specifically into those products, but and what they are. But I'm curious, Chris, to hear your take on, do you need to have one of those products to make a quote unquote good mocktail? Or could you just look at doing it? I'm going back to the whole vegan parallel. So you don't, vegans don't need mock meats. I mean, it's nice to have whatever, but you could easily just eat a whole food plant-based diet. What is your take on that for crafting cocktails without actual spirits and without spirit alternatives, like just using like fruits and juices and teas and more naturally created stuff?
Yeah, you don't need those spirits in the cocktails, but I think they do create dimension and a complexity. And so, I look back at, like, when you cocktail world first started kind of happening, right? Everyone made the same drinks. Everyone made sidecars and daiquiris and gimlets and things like that. And then the liqueur modifier sort of concept showed up, where now everyone said, oh, well, let me not just put vodka in this drink, just as an example. Let me put vodka and a ginger liqueur in this drink. Now I have a more complex cocktail. And then everyone said, oh, wait a minute, I can make a syrup that is more complex than simple syrup, and I can add a flavor there. And now I have a drink with vodka and ginger and pineapple syrup. And all of a sudden, these drinks are getting more and more complex, and there's more and more flavors going on. So I was down in Puerto Rico literally this week, and I had an incredible, I mean, one of the best I've ever tasted, non-alcoholic cocktails. And it had something called hobo juice, which I had never heard of. It's a fruit that grows in Puerto Rico. And it had lime, and it had cinnamon syrup and aquafaba, because it had a foam on it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in there. Maybe ginger. And it was off the charts good, like delicious. And I only ordered it because, A, it was on the menu, and B, I was blown away by the. I had no idea what hobo juice was, and I said to the guys, "And I just got to try this because I want to try. I want to know what this tastes like." And I thought when I was drinking it, if there was a non-alcoholic ingredient in there, it would have just taken it from, let's call it, a 9 or a 10 to a 12, because it would have been more complex. And I felt like, even though like I said, the drink was outstanding, I just thought this could have a little bit more complexity if you added something to that. Because there is a richness and a viscosity that tends to be missing without putting one of those in there. And so mouthfeel is a little different. So yes, you can definitely make good non-alcoholic drinks without non-alcoholic spirits, as they're called, or beverages or alternatives. But I think those do add complexity. Like one of my favorites is Aplos, and it just has so much going on in there that when you put it in, like I made a non-alcoholic Paloma with it, and it just has complexity and dimension, and like sort of takes you on that ride that a really good cocktail makes.
Okay, I have a stupid question.
There are no stupid questions.
Just wait. Technically, bitters are quote unquote non-alcoholic, despite the fact that they're alcoholic. Can you use bitters? And I know there's at least one non-alcoholic bitters brand out there. It's going to be growing as a category. I've dabbled in making my own, and I always distill my own high proof to make it the high proof, then make the bitters. Can you use bitters, and do you have a favorite bitter that you like to use?
So this is a touchy subject, and the reason it's a touchy subject is that, when I'm ever talking to anybody about sobriety and or sober curious, that is a box that does not fit all, one does not fit in, right? That is a every single individual has their own relationship with alcohol, everyone. And so if I am completely sober and I don't drink, and I refuse to put any alcohol in my mouth, putting Angostura bitters in my non-alcoholic cocktail is not really a responsible thing to do. Now, if I am somebody who doesn't have an alcohol, quote unquote, I hate to use this term, problem, or the relationship with alcohol is for them is they have a healthy relationship. And the t way I determine a healthy relationship is however you view what you want your relationship to alcohol to be, if that aligns, then you have a healthy relationship. If you have a view of your alcohol should be here and your relationship is over here, that is a not healthy relationship with alcohol. Some people drink every night and they're very okay with that. And I would say that they should do that. I'm not trying to stigmatize alcohol drinking. That's not what my mission or my messaging is. At the same time, I don't think everyone in the world has to be sober. I do because I have a weird chemical reaction when I drink and it doesn't work out well. And I have blackouts and I have hallucinations. And for whatever reason, I've never really understood it, but I took a break and I just never went back to it. And so I don't drink any alcohol, but I taste and spit when I judge cocktail competitions. And that's worked for me because I compartmentalize that my problem with alcohol was never about the science of cocktail making or understanding a cocktail. It was about the social aspect of drinking. So for me, I compartmentalize those two things. But not everybody does that. There are plenty of bartenders out there who refuse to put any alcohol in their mouth and they are sober and that is a trigger point for them. So I can't give you a blanket answer on that question. Some people would say, yeah, bitters are fine. And other people would say, no, it's not fine. And so I feel like one of the responsible things of doing this is that understanding the products, some of them are truly 0-0, while others are not. And I think that that's another form of education to understand of what is and what is not alcoholic versus considered a potable bitter like Angostura has a lot. There's a lot of booze in Angostura, like a lot. And so if you did the old gin in it where, or a pink gin, like there's a lot of booze in that. And so, people that joke around and they like, do a shot of Underberg after dinner. Well, if you're sober, that's not being sober. That's just not drinking cocktails or drinking beer or whatever you're saying you're not doing. Because, blasting an Underberg is certainly falls in the category of drinking alcohol. So again, there's no blanket statement to that question. Now, again, there are brands out there who are non-alcoholic bitters. And those would fall into the category of, I guess, a bitter that would be okay to be called a 0-0 cocktail.
That's an answer. That's good. I not everything is black and white, and I'm okay with that.
And you know what? Like I think about like pregnancy, right? When people are pregnant, a lot of them just do not want to have any alcohol. They take a responsibility to not drink when they're pregnant. And so, like, we have a 0-0 on our menu at the restaurant I work at. And, I tell people, like, I don't ever, I'm not like, hey, I see you're pregnant there. Would you like a 0.0 drink? But people will ask. They'll say, like, do you have any mocktails or non-alcoholic cocktails? And I don't have to address the fact that I can tell they're pregnant visually. I'll just say to them, I'll say, yeah, and it's 100% 0.0. And that assurance means something versus I'm sure everyone on the call here knows what a Queen's Park Swizzle is. If I make you a non-alcoholic Queen's Park Swizzle, but I cover it in Angostura and Peychaud's on the top of it, that's not really 0.0. So it's not really being responsible to someone whose purpose is to drink something alcohol-free.
Yeah, that's what I've always wondered. And it came up when I was working retail, the NA options, because people were starting to ask more about it, primarily like NA wines. And a lot of them were still 0.5% ABV. I'm like that still has alcohol. That's not non-alcoholic. What?
The
So that was
same with beer.
mind-boggling to me.
Some beers are 0.0 and other beers are not.
Yeah, and it seems to actually be the norm, or at least it was a year or two ago. 0.5 was considered completely non-alcoholic, but that's not true at all. I'm like, how does that work?
Right.
Not true.
The argument is like if you'll take cough syrup, right, that has a little bit of alcohol in it. So the argument is that it's basically the same thing. But again, it's not socially responsible to call that a non-alcoholic product. And again, I think that the education of this, even this conversation, right? This is education for everyone listening right now. They're learning that there are differences, and I don't think a lot of people have taken the time to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that specifically get non-alcoholic mouthwash because they are alcoholics and they need to cut every source of anything alcoholic, even if it's something as seemingly non-issue as mouthwash.
Yeah, and I try to sympathize with that. Like again, I taste and spit and it works for me. But I would never suggest that to somebody else who doesn't drink or who has quit drinking as an option if they're not comfortable with it, because it could be a major trigger. And then next thing you know, they're having some issues again. And for me, like I've had this conversation multiple times with my partner, with friends, where they'll say, do you ever think you'll drink again? And I'll say no, because I know myself at my age, I know that if I ever have a drink, that is going to slowly, it may take years, but it will snowball and I will eventually end up where I was again. I know myself enough to know that. So if I just cut it out completely, it's working for me for almost 10 years and I've never been happier. And so for, like I said, you have to be empathetic in this world. And we have to understand that again, when it comes to alcohol and drugs of any kind, everyone has a different relationship and they need to figure out what works for them. And it's not up to any of us to tell them, do A, B, C exactly the way I say it, because you just can't do that.
Oh, yeah. I wish so many more groups would take that into consideration, whether it be food related or religious related or politics related or whatever related. Just fucking Christ.
Well, I just think we're surrounded in a world of extremes, and I for me, it feels like it's only getting worse. And
Yeah.
so
How dare you?
there
That's a
are
very extreme view.
it feels like we are getting to a place where there's no gray area, and people struggle with gray area.
Yeah. Well, I want to change tack here a little bit. Do you have any tips or suggestions for kind of surefire recipes or ideas of how people can create their own non-alcoholic drinks at home that aren't just, the normal tea, coffee, seltzers, whatever? Like how to actually make something fun and new. Like,
Yeah.
what are
Yeah,
your
it's
thoughts?
actually it's really really interesting, and I'm not trying to self-plug here, but I will. I have been doing a non-alcoholic mixology class now for a little while, and with corporations and people that want to have networking events where they're not, drinking, because It's always been one of my favorite things is when I've worked a private event with alcohol, you separate real fast. Like the 90% of people that have a drink and hold on to that drink for dear life for like 2 hours, and it's nothing but I melted ice water by the time they're done with it. But they know their boss is in the room or their coworkers in the room, so they behave themselves. And then there's like the one or two people that are like just pounding booze back, and you're like, oh my God, like what are you doing? And so it's been the NA thing has for me has been a really cool opportunity to show corporations the idea behind a like a one-on-one mixology class, but with the NA space. And so what's been really interesting for me is that, you know, winning world class, I'd like to think that I can make a good cocktail. And so it's really interesting because when you work with non-alcoholic spirits and when you don't have alcohol in the cocktail, it's actually not plug and play anymore. So where you can take, for example, I can say, okay, I'm going to take a daiquiri and I'm going to take out the rum and I'm going to put in whatever, and it's going to basically still be the same drink, right? It'll still be balanced if I just take out one alcohol and put another alcohol, and it kind of still works. With non-alcoholics, the whole game changes. Like your classic like ratios are all off. And so I found it's been really fun to try to balance drinks all of a sudden with non-alc. And I'm like, whoa, like the classic formula of like two, three quarter usually doesn't work. And I'm like, this is crazy. And so I would say you still stay with the classic cocktail concepts, but then you switch out ingredients. So for example, if you're going to make a daiquiri, for example, and you want to use a non-alcoholic rum, like Ritual makes a really good one, Liars makes a good one. You can take that rum and you can still pour it in and do three quarters of lime and three quarters of syrup, and it will be okay. But because it's a non-alc, you may want to increase your sugar a little bit, and you may want to throw some other flavors in there to create, again, more complexity in the drink. So for example, you know, you can make that syrup a different flavor. And I just keep going back to the pineapple thing, but you know, to put in a non-alcoholic rum and then lime juice and then make a pineapple syrup and maybe do like a little bit of muddled jalapeno in there. I mean, jalapeno and pineapple is obviously a crowd-pleasing flavor combination. So to do that, now you have a non-alcoholic drink that has, again, it has intention, it has the same design as a cocktail. And so you can do the same thing where you can use teas and you can use aquafaba to create an egg white kind of experience and make their drink more rich. There's so many ways to do this. And again, you can, like I said, the mocktail I had the other night, no alcohol in there, no non-alcoholic spirit or anything like that. They just figured out the balance of it. So, you know, they had a tropical fruit juice in there, they had a citrus in there, they had a syrup in there. It worked.
Awesome. Great tips. Thank you.
Well, damn. Can you, Chris, can you give us a little bit about where people can find you? Social medias, Bat Signal, what's your deal, man?
Bat Signal probably more effective than social media. So,
Same.
my Instagram is at Continuous Bev. Which is short for Continuous Beverage Solutions, which is my company. Obviously, you can also find me as Chris Cardone. Now, I do like to be edgy, and so the O in Cardone is actually a zero. And so there's that. There's LinkedIn under again my name, same deal. And I have, you know, my website is continuousbev.com. So again, those are probably the best outlets to find me. And yeah, I'm in New York and I'm behind the bar at Esodi on Friday nights, and I'm on the floor on Saturday nights and doing events throughout the week.
Well, I just followed you, so that's one.
Yes.
There it is. Julia, while I look up what the fuck non-alcoholic mouthwash is, could you bring us home?
Sure. Well, Chris, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you and get your insight into this whole non-alcoholic realm, because we have talked for the last four seasons pretty exclusively about alcohol. So we thought we'd open the floor up at the beginning of season five with this new venture, and we hope to get you back again with some actual NA producers and taste some different things and see how they all wind up and everyone's thoughts. But you've been very informative. It's been a pleasure to have you. So join us next time, Ramblers, when we talk about those assholes who only want, oh gosh, I don't know, Fireball? Like, I don't know.
Yes.